Hello and welcome to Your Health First. Have you ever been in doubt about some of your potential health issues? Have you ever been confused whether you should seek health attention or not? Fear not, QF Radio brings you Your Health First this season, where we'll be discussing health-related matters with experts from Weill Cornell Medicine. Today's topic is all about obesity, and joining me very shortly in the studio is Dr. Tahiri from Weill Cornell Medicine. Don't forget you can join the conversation online. Go to Facebook, search for QF Radio, and also you can tweet us here in the studio at QF Radio 2. That's at QF Radio 2. Joining me in the studio now from Weill Cornell Medicine is Dr. Tahiri. First of all, welcome to QF Radio. Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode.
Thank you for inviting me.
So let's start with an introduction to yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what you do.
Well, I'm Shahar Tahiri. I'm Professor of Medicine at Weill Cornell Medicine here in Qatar. And I originally came here from the UK about 2 years ago. I'm an endocrinologist with an interest in diabetes and obesity. And I've been doing that for over 20 years now, having experiences in the UK. I initially became interested in diabetes and obesity because it was an increasing problem and I could see it developing across the world. So for me, it was an interesting area to work in both scientifically, but also to be able to help people overcome many chronic diseases are associated with obesity.
And also for this part of the world, in the Gulf, of course, diabetes and obesity has just been an increasing problem, isn't it?
It's a massive problem here. If you look across the world with obesity levels rising, you can see it's rising at a much greater rate here. The higher percentage of people affected by obesity. And what is so interesting here is that the majority of people are young here. So if you have a large number of individuals who are young and develop obesity at a young age, evidence shows that they carry on having problems at a younger age with early mortality affecting quality of life. And of course, you need young individuals for a growing economy to develop the country further. So it's really important to tackle this problem.
And today on the episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the impact of obesity on health and performance. There's such a broad spectrum that we could speak about when it comes to obesity. So we'll try and kind of break it down and work through part by part. So first of all, what is obesity? What is kind of classed as obese, and what does obesity actually mean?
Well, people often get confused as to what obesity is. Basically, obesity means too much fat, but also it means too much fat in the wrong place. So it's important to explain that. Generally, obesity is measured by taking your weight in kilograms, dividing by your height, multiplied by itself in meters. And this gives you a value. And a body mass index, which is the value that we calculate, of 30 or above is considered to be obese. Now, this by itself doesn't mean that somebody has got a problem with excess fat, because you could be very muscular and very strong and muscles heavier than fat, and you will get high body mass index. So if you look at rugby players, for example, they have high body mass index, but they're not necessarily fat. So the main worry is having fat in the wrong place. And that's really, if you look at people who have problems with fat around the waist, particularly bellies hanging out and things like that. So that when the fat is around the waist and also around the organs of the body, what we call visceral fat, that's what increases risk of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and all the health problems. So we usually talk about people as if they're apples and pears. So people who have sort of an apple sort of look about them, they're the ones who are at higher risk than the ones who are pears, where the fat is much lower down around the hips and the buttocks rather than the abdomen.
That's it. It's kind of hard to imagine perhaps sometimes, but you do have to think about placing a giant apple or a pear in your body and which one suits your form more so to see which kind of body type that you are. So apple is the less preferable one. It means you are holding more weight around your waist and potentially some of the internal fat that you just mentioned there.
That's right. It's very easy to monitor things like waist. If you feel like your trousers getting tight or your trousers getting looser, you know which direction you're going very easily in terms of your risk of having fat in the wrong place. But actually, it's also important to point out actually fat is a good thing, and that's why body is so good at preserving it. We need fat to be able to reproduce, to have children, and it's important for the human species. And that's why our bodies are so strongly geared towards keeping as it is, and it's so difficult to lose weight.
Well, that's it. It's the eternal battle, isn't it, really, to try and lose fat. And fat has got a bad name, really, whether it's consumption of fat or whether it's body fat. I think everybody's always trying to, you know, trim away at it, aren't they?
Yes. I mean, it's important to realise that actually fat by itself is not a bad thing, like I said, but it's just having too much of it in the wrong place that predisposes individuals to having lots of diseases. And the interesting thing about obesity and why I became interested in it is it affects almost every organ in the body, right from your vision to your hearing to your heart to your lungs. Everything is affected by obesity. So in a way, it's really impregnates somebody once they develop obesity and affecting them at all levels.
And I mean, you mentioned some of the ways that you can really kind of classify or you can try and diagnose obesity, and BMI, as you say, can be misleading. It's, you know, it's not always the easiest way of going around it. So you've got, you know, the numbers and statistics as well as the visual and trying to, you know, assess at that point, you know, and then obviously speaking to a doctor is probably the next point where you would be able to assess where you position on a spectrum of weight and obesity.
Yes, I mean, the other fact to point out is actually this level of obesity that we're talking about, like body mass of 30, is not necessarily true for every ethnic origin. So if you look at people from Asian region, actually 27.5 is the cut point for obesity. And also looking at overweight, being overweight increases the risk of diabetes as well. So we're looking at the body mass index of 25 and above. But actually this is lower for people from Asian backgrounds, so it's 23. Because we know if you have two individuals, one is European, one is Asian, and both have a body mass index of 25, if you look at them under the scanner, you will see that the Asian person has got much more fat for that level of body mass index. Unfortunately, there aren't very good ways of measuring body fat in the clinic, but there are some scales you could stand on that tells you how much fat there is in your body. But they're not always accurate, because the problem with those scales are basically, it depends how hydrated you are, how much you've been drinking the night before, how much you've eaten, what time of day it is, and many other factors. So they're not as accurate on a sort of daily basis. What's useful about those kind of scales is that they will tell you what happens over the long term. So it's worth looking at, like, over 3 months, 4 months, whatever, after making an intervention.
So perhaps not best to go on those every day. Don't be scrutinising yourself on, but perhaps a good tool to have at home if you did want to, like you say, over the space of a few months, monitor weekly or every few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. But especially with those fat scales, because they change in different ways depending on what you've been doing the night before and things like that. But ideally, you need to measure your weight on a regular basis. I mean, at least weekly, some people daily, whatever works for you. The main thing is to keep an eye on things, especially for people who've lost weight. It's very easy to slip back into the old ways. Unless you're keeping an eye on things, you can easily go back. So regular monitoring of weight is really key.
The self-shaming. We're like, oh no, I've gained a few pounds.
Well, I wouldn't say that. It's just basically knowing that, look, yesterday or the week before, I have been behaving in a different way and eating more than I should, or being less active than before. So maybe I need to make some changes this week. And in fact, this is the amazing question that people always ask me. They say, all these people are eating a lot, but they're never putting on weight. Why is that happening? And when you look at these individuals, they do eat a lot, but what they do is they regulate their food down the line. So in subsequent days, they're eating less, or the next meal they're cutting down. So that's how they manage to do that. And you need to think about that when you're trying to lose weight.
And you can't always compare yourself to another person. You know, I guess your situation, your body, your whatever it is, whether it's your metabolism, whether it's your genetics, or it's so different to the person, to your friend or to another family member. You can't really compare yourself, can you?
Absolutely. I mean, the way I look at it is everybody has their own journey, basically. If you look at the different athletes, some are faster than others. And that has to do with training, genes, and all kinds of different factors that come into it. So comparing yourself with another individual will either make you feel good or make you feel depressed.
You can't really win.
But you have to do it in a sort of in a positive way if you're going to do that. But everybody has their own journey. Some people gain weight quickly. Some people lose weight quickly. In a way, if you think about it, it's the kind of car that you can afford. It's determined by your genes. I can afford a certain car, you can afford another type of car. Those are your genes. It's how you drive those genes that's the key.
And I mean, with obesity, why does it occur? There are many factors at play, really, aren't there, for why obesity occurs?
Well, it's a very genetic condition, so we can't really get out of that. Body weight and height, which are used to measure body mass index, for example, are very highly inherited characteristics of human beings. So we know our genes have a large factor to play with. But the other emerging evidence is what happens during actually development, in when you're in the womb, actually, or has a bearing in terms of whether you develop obesity or not. So in a way, what your mother did during pregnancy makes a difference too. So if you're deprived of nutrition, for example, in pregnancy, then you're more likely to become obese later on. So we know that babies who are small for gestational age, for example, end up having problems with obesity later on. So having looked at those sort of early effects, genetics and environmental in utero, then what we need to look at what happens afterwards. And a lot of that has to do with our food selection, what kind of foods we're eating, how much we're eating of those foods, and how much activity we take, because those are the two sides of the energy balance equation. And the way I look at it is each of these factors, what we eat and how active we are determined by a multitude of factors. In a way, I call it like, it's a bit like Doha Airport. People arrive at it from different angles. So the various reasons why people eat particular food and eat a lot of it, and there's reasons why people don't undertake activity. But once obesity occurs, we need to unravel all those and becomes very complex. In fact, there was a report in the UK called the Foresight Report, but it looked at all the different factors that contribute to obesity. And it's well worth looking at online on that map. It's extremely complex because lots of factors come into it based on your environment, what you're eating, where you've been, lots of sort of acute means what happened the day before to long-term effects. So it's very complex.
Hugely complex, really. I think, again, it goes down to that individual, every environmental situation, condition, and even, obviously, say, genetics and what you were exposed to pre-birth, really. It's incredible. And also, there's a lot of research going into this area of, obviously, obesity, because it's such a global epidemic, really. And even to be able to assess that a lot of these influences come from even before you're born is quite incredible.
Yes, I'm even, like, going back is even could be what your grandmother did, for example. It could be passed on, and this is called epigenetics. Epigenetics basically is how different factors regulate your genes, and some genes can switch on and off. Mm. And this can be switched on and off either prior to conception or even during development. So you could be actually stuck with the genes that are predisposing you to obesity already. But again, having that, there are things that you can do. The beautiful thing about human beings is they can think about things, they can act on it, and they're not victims of their biology always.
No, exactly. That's it. And it's just the more information you have, the better assessment you can make on how to work with the situation and to improve it or to make it work to your benefit.
Absolutely. But what's happened before is not under your control. So what you need to do is think about how you're managing things now and why you're doing certain things. And a lot of psychology comes into that, because people do things, for example, they eat a lot of food because they are stressed or because they're bored or because they have a fight with someone or they don't feel well, and they want that comfort of that kind of food. So they have to look at how they're doing things on a behavioural level as well.
So that really works for if somebody wants to assess, you know, how to prevent obesity on an individual level, that's certainly one good assessment to start with, isn't it?
I mean, the main thing is if you want to prevent obesity at an individual level is to think about it. The problem is most people who become obese, it creeps up on them. It doesn't happen overnight. Mm. What happens is you have a biscuit, and a chocolate biscuit about 100 calories is equivalent to you walking a lot, and you don't do that walking. But normally people don't just eat one chocolate biscuit, they eat a whole packet. And I would do the same. And you don't think about it. You're sitting in front of television, you're unconsciously eating all this kind of food. And eventually you realize, hey, I've got diabetes. And once you have diabetes, then somebody gives you some treatment, and the treatment actually might make your weight worse and make it more difficult. And then you keep accumulating treatments. And once you become medicalized, then it becomes really difficult to go back. So it's important to think about actually health. Not many people think about their health. It's just too busy living their lives without thinking, actually, what am I living this life for? Who am I looking after? And if you know, your body is like your machine, and if you're not looking after your machine, eventually something will happen to it, and it creeps up on you, and eventually you have obesity. And then you come to somebody like me in the clinic and say, well, solve that problem for me. I want to solve very quickly.
Yeah.
But actually, it doesn't happen like
always
that.
Always fast. And you say it takes time to put on. It takes time to come off with weight, for sure. But I mean, as you say, with health, it's the most important thing to have, because without your health, what do you have? So it's one of those things that we all probably are guilty of neglecting, really.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, one of the factors that come through, like I see a mother and they're very busy with their kids and say, well, I'm too busy to look after myself because I'm looking after my kids. And I put the question to them, well, what happens if you break down? Who's going to look after your kids then? But actually, they don't realize that they're such an important part of their family that if they don't really look after themselves, nobody then looks after the kids. So it's really important to look, have a holistic view of what they're doing in their lives and put their health at the fore of their lives, both fathers and mothers, because they're actually really important to their kids. They have responsibilities, but they don't think about it in those terms. They say, I'm helping my kid do his homework. But actually, if you're fitter, healthier, you're able to help your children better.
Absolutely. And what do you think as a society, what can we help to do to prevent obesity?
Well, we have a really hard battle here. And the reason is because most of the manufacturers who are developing food or sell food have designed the kind of food that are enticing, that are highly calorific, in small amounts and large portions of it, and also very cheap. So what happens is people eat a lot of these kind of foods, and that eventually results in obesity. And unless we are really serious about tackling how these manufacturers are manipulating what we're doing, we're not going to win here. Particularly if you look at sugary drinks and fizzy drinks and sort of sodas that people are drinking, it's really important to realize there are really high sugar, and this high sugar is actually addictive. And when you eat or drink these kind of foods, you're basically stuck with that because you get this rush that you need to continue eating. And the other problem with these fast food kind of approaches is that people become look at it as something really good, like a treat to take your kids to, but actually the quality of the food is not that good either, so you don't want your kids to be eating those kind of foods. And then they have giveaways, like very small plastic toys. There's nothing really amazes me than people wanting something for free. And, you know, I remember sort of watching a huge queue. So I went to the Milan Expo because I was in the Qatar Pavilion. And we were talking about obesity there, which was amazing. And you can see lots of people just queuing up to get something absolutely worthless.
Yeah.
Because it was free.
Yeah, we love a freebie. We're all kind of guilty. We're like, what, free?
Hmm? And for that reason, people think like, oh, I paid for the buffet, so I have to eat everything there is on the buffet, for example. Or I have to eat more of it because I paid for it. Or I have to clean my plates because I paid for it. But actually, would you rather have that food inside you making you obese, or would you like it in the bin? You have to make a decision here. And it really never ceases to amaze me how people like to get things for free. So these manufacturers are very smart. They give kids toys, so the kids equate going to these fast food restaurants something really happy and something to do. Of course, they have names like happy this and happy that, and jolly this and jolly that, but actually they're tricking us into behaving in a certain way.
No, absolutely. And also, I think also here there are so many fast food chains. Sometimes getting access to nutritional food is difficult. You know, it can be that it's quite expensive. We have a lot of imports. And we also, you know, just getting access to supermarkets can even be difficult sometimes. So there are hurdles. You have to commit to it. You know, if you want to go to a supermarket and get your fresh vegetables for the week, you have to sit in traffic for a little while to get there. But it's a commitment you have to make. And it's not just, a case of taking the time to do it, but it's for your health.
Well, your health is serious. I mean, people, you don't queue up in a petrol station to fill up a petrol car with diesel, do you? Because your car will break down. So you make sure you go to the right place to fill up with the right petrol for your car. Similarly with your body, the kind of fuel that you put in your body will affect how your body's functioning and also how you're going to prevent yourself becoming obese. The other factor I think we need to talk about is the sponsorship of sports that occurs with a lot of these fast food manufacturers. And what they do is they think it's really cool to sort of drink these kind of drinks. If you're sporty, you will drink that. And actually this idea of sports drink, actually a really high calorie, but actually people are not sporty in reality, and they drink these without putting the effort in. It's okay to play for Real Madrid and drink this kind of drink once in a while, and even they don't do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, the chances of these people actually consuming these beverages are probably pretty slim.
Yes.
Because it'd probably impact their performance even. They'd be like, oh.
Absolutely. And you can see them sort of holding sort of bottles in sort of in football matches with the logo and advertising for a particular drink. But I doubt if that drink is actually inside that bottle.
Yeah. No, for sure. So I guess some practical advice, perhaps, if you want to manage weight. We've obviously touched on diet. But what would you suggest then as just key factors for people to take on board for diet and exercise if they're looking to try and manage their weight?
I think the key is to prevent this occurring in the first place. So to be healthy, you need to choose the right kinds of foods and eat enough of it, but not too much of it. Actually, the food that we need for nutrition is not very large. The food that we need for love is endless, and it will never love you back, especially when you develop obesity. So it's important to choose the right amount of food that's healthy, that's within recommendations. Start be having vegetables, of having like five pieces of fruit and vegetables, portions of fruit and vegetables a day, making sure that you get enough protein as well as carbohydrate, but not too much of it. And having the right portions is really key. And secondly is that avoiding fast food restaurants and fast food, because like I said, these kind of foods are highly calorific, very small amounts, and they make you incredibly hungry and you continue eating. Similarly, you don't really need to have sort of chocolates and crisps and this kind of thing for your kids. People say, oh, I have it for my kids, but I eat them. Mm. But actually, then they don't do your kids any good either in the long term. In terms of activity, of course, the weather here makes it difficult for people to be active, and that's a common reason people say, I can't become active. But actually, there's lots of places you can walk, and walking is a fantastic activity that people can do. They can go to malls and they can walk and they can do all kinds of things. And if you really wanted to do it, you can do it. And you know, to be fair, I haven't seen so many gyms and in one place as I see, for example, in Doha. And there's a lot of opportunity, and some people live in compounds, for example, and a lot of them have access to sport facilities, which would be swimming pools and gyms. So it's not lack of resources, and the country has the resources to actually do allow you to do activities. So I don't consider that an excuse. Another factor to consider is actually being sedentary. We know that the more time you spend sitting down, the more likely you're going to end up having obesity and diabetes and things like that. So actually, if you have a desk job, for example, scheduling like every 10, 15 minutes to get up and walk around a little bit, and using that kind of approach to get rid of sedentariness will help. A lot of people spend time, for example, calling people who are actually down the office from them to discuss something that they need to discuss because of their work. But all they have to do is walk, and actually this will allow them to actually interact with their colleagues more as well. So it's better to actually be as active as possible during the day, and that really helps. And we know that sedentariness is a major driver for obesity, and it's been observed in many studies.
I'd recommend, these devices you can get, Fitbits. I think even some mobile phones will, you know, they'll calculate how many steps you're doing. Because sometimes just having the actual awareness of, okay, what do I actually do on a day? And just do a day as you normally would with your regular desk, you know, work, and then, you know, up and down the stairs a few times, whatever. And you'll see, you know, of the 10,000 steps that you're meant to take a day, you'll get a good assessment of like, am I near that? Am I way under? I'm quite an active person, but in my at work, when I actually first wore one of these Fitbits, I could see that I only walked about 3,000 steps in a day when it was a busy day at work and I was at my desk. I was quite shocked by that. So as soon as you're aware and then you can chip away at it, okay, I'll take the stairs again. Why am I in a lift? How far is it to walk from this side of the car park to the other? I'll park a bit further away. These little bits really do make a difference here.
I mean, yes, I mean, these devices really help. I mean, it's very easy for people to say, I'm on my feet all day, I'm so active. But actually, when you look at it objectively, they're doing about 2,000, 3,000 steps. Mm. And, you know, your mobile phone, whether you have an iPhone, for example, it's got a health app that tells you your number of steps, whether you're wearing a watch device. They're all very useful. We have this sort of this 10,000 steps as sort of the goal, but it's actually a lot of hard work to do that. So it's important to achieve that as much as you can. So what you would look at is how many steps have I done on a daily basis, let's say 2,000, and increase it by about 10% every week. So eventually you're doing 10,000. And the other thing to point out is it's better to do steps across the day than actually do 10,000. You don't have to do 10,000 in one go.
Yeah.
And any activity that you do, the shortest bout is 10 minutes. So if you're going to be active, for example, for an hour, you can do 6-10 minutes or 3-20 minutes or 2 half an hours or an hour in one go. So you can really fit this into your life.
Yeah,
people say, I just really don't have time to do it.
Yeah.
But actually, that's the other excuse that I get from people. I just have no time. So it's possible to actually do that.
Manageable. Just break it down, fit it in where you can, when you can and how you can. And, you know, over time, being consistent with it is where it pays off. And you're not going to see something overnight. It's a long journey, but it's a start.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting because people say to me, I'm so busy, I've got no time. And I say, actually, well, what is your job? Are you Prime Minister?
But even the
Prime Minister exercises.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is nobody's really that busy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm busy with my kids. But actually, there are things that you can do with your kids together to instill in them an active lifestyle.
And that's it. That's where it really pays off, because it's not just for your health and, you know, but also those around you, your family, your children, who really will learn better lifestyle choices through you if you are a parent. So you're giving much more than just kind of to yourself in
Absolutely.
Those situations.
You need to change your whole environment, because then you have to work as a family, because it's always difficult when somebody's trying to sort of change their lives and others are not in the family. So it's important to have everybody on board and work together to achieve those outcomes.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a huge topic, and I'm sure we'll be catching up again with you later on in the series to talk about more topics related to obesity and diabetes. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
If you have any questions for today's expert, or you have any topics that you would like us to discuss in our future shows, please go online and like us on Facebook. You can post on our page and also, of course, follow all of the information about the programmes here at QF Radio. You can also tweet us on Twitter at QF Radio 2 is a Twitter handle. That's at QF Radio with the number 2. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Laura Finity, and this has been an episode of Your Health First on QF Radio 91.7 FM.